This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Talking swamp sweating. That's for the bathtub full of sweat.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. We're here. The lounge is semi-full tonight. We have a few people. Again, summer doldrums. We don't have a completely packed lounge, but joining me on the couch is Andy Flanagan, Keith Schmidt, the regulars, and then back for a second appearance on the Sports Lounge, back by popular demand, I should say, due to all the influx of positive feedback we received. Cowboy Senior, Roger Morissette, is here. So, welcome to the show, everyone. The music's loud. The cigars are lit. The drinks are flowing. The ladies are looking good. And we're ready to dive into this week in sports. So, to break down what we're going to do for you tonight, we're going to continue our weekly previews of the NFL. So, last week we did the AFC West, highlighted by Cowboy Senior calling Aqib Talib a wuss on national radio. This week we will dive into the not quite as strong AFC South. We're going to follow that up with Major League Baseball trade deadline analysis. Keith's going to spearhead that one as our MLB expert. And we're going to talk a little bit about the NBA, specifically the Paul George injury during the Olympic basketball scrimmage, how unfortunate that was. Maybe talk a little bit about the Olympic team and what we see going on there. And then finally, we're going to close things out with myself, the Cowboy, and Chad Campbell discussing MMA. There was a big brawl this week. Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier gave the fans for free what they should make them pay for, as they say. And we're going to talk about that, and then also take an in-depth look at the light heavyweight division. So glad everyone's joining us. I understand we may have some new listeners this week, and if so, welcome to the Sports Lounge. All are welcome.
Hey-o!
So, without further ado, let's get started here. So, looking at the AFC South.
Power division.
Power division. Not really.
Is this called the AFC Colts? Is that what it is?
So, last year, the order of finish, we had the Colts winning the division, led by Andrew Luck. Best player in the division, I would say, winning the division at 11-5, and they had the honor of being the only team that finished above 500 in the division. We had Tennessee coming in second at 7-9, Jacksonville at 4-12, and Houston with a terrible 2-14 record during the 2013 season. So, as is customary here on the Sports Lounge, we will tackle each team, take an in-depth look here on the Thinking Man Sports Podcast on placetobenation.com. So first team we're going to take a look at is the Colts. And the Cowboy Senior, seeing as you're the esteemed guest of honor and you're the one the fans are clamoring for, why don't you give us a little analysis on the Colts?
The Colts are clearly the best team in this weak division. But they have their flaws, but they also have their strengths. Biggest strength being Andrew Luck, best young quarterback in the game, to the point where he's getting to the point where he's not so young anymore. We can almost start to call him a young veteran. Definitely an elite quarterback. He's explosive, moves around better than he's given credit for, great arm. And the positive that they've done this year, they've surrounded him with some better receiving weapons than he's had, adding Hakeem Nicks to the mix. Reggie Wayne coming back, T.Y. Hilton, and tight end. They still have Kobe Fleener back, who Andrew has liked ever since his college days. And also, Dwayne Allen, a very versatile and good pass-catching tight end, is back from a hip injury. Weaknesses in that offense? A glaring one is the offensive line, especially the interior of the offensive line. They suffered a big blow when Donald Thomas, their starting guard, went out for the season with a quad injury, which kind of leaves their interior line with two untested guards. Second-year man Hugh Thornton and their second-round pick, Jack Muhorn, who was a tackle in college. They're moving him to left guard because they have no choice. The other big part of losing Thomas is not only was he the anchor of that offensive line at left guard, but he was their backup center. So now if the center goes down, Khalid Holmes goes down, they have even more problems. So that is definitely their Achilles heel. Are they going to be able to protect Andrew? Is there going to be pressure coming up the middle at him? And also, are they going to be able to run the ball? Part of that being they hope for a rejuvenated Trent Richardson with a little help from Ahmad Bradshaw. And again, they're hoping that that interior line kind of steps up. The one positive thing we can say about the two guys on the interior, Andrew Luck has got nothing but good things to say about how Muhart has looked so far in camp. He really, really likes him. He says he likes the way he's handling himself both on and off the field as a rookie. So these are all good things. Obviously, the other Achilles heel for this team is the defense. Specifically, they have major problems stopping the run. I don't think they've done too much to remedy that. So I think that's going to be a problem again. Also, they're great pass rusher. Robert Mathis is suspended for the first four games of the season. And a rock that they've had at safe, strong safety for the last 8 years, Antoine Bethea, is gone now. So they do have their problems. However, just with Andrew Luck and the receivers he has around him, it should be enough to not have any trouble taking this division. However, those other issues I spoke about tells me I'm not sure how much further they can go than that. That's about what I have on the Colts.
Thanks, Cowboy Senior. Now, you know, to second and kind of looking, do an in-depth look at what one of the things you spoke about there. Trent Richardson, enigma. I have my own feelings on Trent Richardson, but I know Andy's got some feelings on Trent Richardson. So, Andy, could you give me a what do you think of Trent? Do you think he's just bad, or do you think it was a system thing, and now he's gonna finally show that explosiveness? I mean, the guy has basically single-handedly made it so no one will take a running back in the first round of the NFL draft.
Fantasy draft. Ooh. Yeah, I think at this point that there's enough evidence that we can pretty safely say he's just bad. I mean, I can't remember a time where a running back showed that kind of like, you know, tentativeness going to hit a hole, you know, not showing much burst and then came back from that, like improved on that in later seasons. I just don't see much reason for optimism. And that trade they made with the Browns for Richardson, I think, is going to go down as one of the all-time worst. Maybe not all-time, but certainly in recent memory.
Especially if Johnny Football is who the Cowboy thinks he could be, because that's who they took with the pick.
That's right.
I 100% agree with you, Andy. I don't care how bad the line is, or I don't care how new the system is. Any one of the people on the couch in the sports lounge could go out there and average 2.9 yards a carry. And not only can he not, you know, does he? And in his good rookie season, where people were kind of high on him, he averaged like 3.5 yards a carry. The guy's never shown he can do it at the NFL level, and he's got ball security issues. I mean, that, you know, to be benched. And I mean, I like Donald Brown as much as the next guy, but to be traded for a first round pick and then benched for Donald Brown for half the season, I think speaks volumes. And I think by week three, barring injury, Ahmad Bradshaw's the bell cow for this team, and Richardson's right in the pine. Mm-hmm. Keith disagrees. So
I gotta disagree with you. Look, Ahmad Bradshaw was a pretty good back before his injury. So if he comes back to what he was, I mean, he's better than Trent Richardson anyway. But
another sad statement for Richardson.
No, Bradshaw was pretty good. I mean, yeah, when he was with the Giants, he was a pretty good back. But Richardson, in his rookie year with Cleveland, was pretty good. Played for a terrible team. No quarterback, no receivers.
pretty good line.
And, you know, to average 3.5, well, yeah, all right. Maybe a decent line, but, I mean...
Best left tackle in football.
Eight guys in the box. Way gone. 3.5 yards a carry is not bad.
I mean, he almost rushed for 1,000 yards.
Plus, he caught the ball out of the backfield. Yeah. No, but I think he scored 11 touchdowns.
All right. Yes.
He was their whole offense. It wasn't much of an offense, but he was it.
He was their offense.
He looked a lot
right?
better
he did
than
everything.
He did last year.
Right? He was all around back. He was Jamal Charles minus 3 yards a carry.
Okay. Anyway.
But, I mean, now he goes to Indianapolis. It's a completely new offense. You know, it's more a zone blocking scheme where it's one cut and go. He's not used to that. All right, he suffered. It wasn't the running game that was a problem because every time Donald Brown came in, he was ripping off 4 yards a carry, right? So, you know, it wasn't the game itself. It was Richardson. Maybe he's more comfortable now. He's got more time to think about. Who knows? Maybe he's a slow learner. Who knows? But I'm going to give him a shot. I want to say 1,200 yards this year with close to 10 touchdowns. My opinion.
If Trent Richardson rushes for 1,200 yards, I'll buy his jersey and we can post it to the website.
I'll tell you what, it'll be the new logo. How about that?
He won't rush for 1,200 yards in the next 2 years combined.
I'll take that. I'll take that.
I mean, the guy...
Look, I think this year he might be able to do it by accident. If the receivers stay healthy, Knicks, Hilton, and Reggie Wayne, if they're all healthy, now you're talking about spreading the field. You get 3 yards before you get touched. So that yards per carry is going to go up by accident, right? And I just think the confidence, the knowing the new offense, having the whole offseason to learn it, to practice it.
He's already hurt.
He's going to do better. Don't worry about it. I'm telling you.
Oh, man.
Look, he's never going to be confused for Adrian Peterson. Never, ever.
Even the other Adrian Peterson.
But he can be a good back. And he will be this year.
As happens on here sometimes, Keith and I are big time disagreeing on this one.
Okay.
So, but my rebuttal to that is, do you think in like weeks 12 and 13 and 14 last year that defenses were stacked in the box against Richardson with the year Lockhead?
No, they weren't.
But they put five guys in the box?
But it goes to confidence, man. Your confidence is shot. You've been fumbling. Now it's like you're thinking about too much stuff going on all at once, and you know, it affects your play.
So what I'll say about Richardson is he may be able this year to get what is blocked for him, which he couldn't do last year because he was having trouble.
Right.
He was having trouble grasping the offense.
Maybe he's stupid. Let's just think about it. Maybe he's stupid.
He
remembered the Cleveland Browns playbook, and he took that to work with him every day in Indianapolis. And guess what? He's running into the back of the left tackle.
So,
who knows?
But the other thing,
I think he'll be better than he was last year. That I can almost guarantee.
You can't be worse than he was last year. That's not a strong statement. The thing, if you watch Trent Richardson run, okay, I've never seen anything like it. The next time he makes the first guy miss or breaks a tackle will be the first time I've ever seen it on film.
Well, you didn't watch him in Cleveland then.
No.
You didn't watch him his rookie year.
I was
completely shocked when he went to Indy last year and watched him play there compared to the guy that I saw in Cleveland the year before, his rookie year. I mean, he was a beast. He was a beast.
Right, guys, let's get a consensus here. Trent Richardson, assuming he stays healthy. We're not going to assume he keeps the starting job because that's certainly not a given. Assuming he stays healthy, plus or minus 1,000 yards rushing, Cowboy Senior.
Minus.
Andy.
Minus.
You know where I'm going. Keith,
plus, baby!
Keith, you are the...
Plus!
Keith is filling the Jeff Machado role.
1,200 yards, double-digit touchdowns. There you go. Write it down.
But I just like I wrote down that the Cubs were going to come in second place in that.
Well, no, Jeff said that. I did tell you Javier Baez was a badass, though.
Oh, you did. Okay. He had a nice game-winning home run. I immediately thought of you, Keith.
Different story for a different day, but keep going.
Hakeem Nicks is, I mean, not to talk about all skill position players, but I see his role in this offense being very, very limited unless there's an injury to Wayne or Hilton. So if you're not aware, they've gone to the Colts standard set that they're going to come out with is a two tight end, two wide receiver right. set.
The 12 with package.
Right, yeah. exactly. With Hilton on one side and Wayne on the other. Mm-hmm. And they're playing Nicks as the third receiver. He came into camp out of shape. I think he's a guy, one of those guys, and this happens in football, where the injury's caught up with him, he doesn't have the burst anymore, and I mean, he's pretty much done at 25 or 26 or however old he is. He might be a decent red zone threat, but back when he was with the Giants and coming up, I mean, Andy, as a huge supporter of the Giants, I mean, he looked like he was going to jump into that Demaryius Thomas, you know, top five receiver for a while, and then the injuries came, and he just hasn't been the same guy, no separation. Can you give us your thoughts on Nicks, Andy?
What's that coming from? Sorry, hold on a second.
Sorry. So
that's what he thought of him. He's a little toy soldier.
So, Cowboy Senior, how do you feel about Hakeem Nicks?
Well, all of the problems you described, and you didn't even mention the fact that he's a receiver without a pair of hands the last year or two. He can't catch anything. I mean, you throw it near him and he drops it. I don't know. You know, there's talent there. And in this position he's in with this team where not that much is expected of him, maybe he'll do a little something. I mean, he doesn't have to do a lot. That offense looks real nice with the two real good pass-catching tight ends and Reggie Wayne and T.Y. Hilton, good wide receivers. And maybe this kid Moncrief, if Nicks goes that bad, Dante Moncrief, who they drafted in the third round, who supposedly has looked good in camp already, will probably leave Nicks in the dust. That wouldn't even surprise me that much. We'll see who Hakeem Nicks is.
Dayrick Rogers has a lot of natural talent, too, and he's on that roster.
Well, what sort of deal did they sign Nicks to?
1 year.
It was a one-year deal?
They gave him a one-year deal. So very, very
perform or
very little risk. It was a great. I thought it was a good signing when they did it. So you know, if you're gonna motivate a guy like that, that's the way to motivate him. Right. Here's your one-year deal. Go earn the big money.
Well, it looks bad
for him so far.
I can see Nicks, you know, a third down possession receiver, third and seven, throw it up. He can catch it. Yeah, that kind of guy. I don't see him putting up 1,000 yards or anything, but. If you're the number three, you might be covered by a safety or you know, a nickel corner or something.
Kyle Arrington.
And he can, you know, he can burn that. I mean, this guy did have number one receiver potential 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean,
he had injuries and, you know.
And it's what's being asked of him now.
Right. So, you know, if you're not asking him to go out there and play every single down, when he comes in, you might get some production out of him.
Yeah,
I think he's going to be all right there.
Here's another,
if he stays healthy.
Another plus in his favor. He's going to have Andrew Luck throwing him the ball instead of that bum Eli Manning.
Oh, boy.
No, come on, Cowboys. And Andy, are you still on the call?
I'm still here, yes.
Again. Cowboys, see you. He's off the reservation again.
High five, Roger. High five.
So he is the Tommy Heinsohn of the Sports Lounge.
Listen,
Andy is a very respectful guy. He's also a huge Giants fan.
Are you
so,
now?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
How does he feel about all those interceptions?
Let's give him a chance to talk, Cowboy Senior. How's that sound?
Fire away, Andy.
What am I firing away on here?
Hakeem. We're trying to defend Eli.
Well, we don't defend Eli.
I will save that for the NFC East, right? Okay.
Do you think, Andy, the question really is, a Cowboy Senior made the emphatic point that even though Nicks has no hands and has lost his burst, that just the upgrade of having Andrew Luck throwing him the ball versus, this is not me saying this, versus that bum, Eli Manning, is going to add up to massive production, even though he goes from the first second option in the offense to probably the third or fourth or fifth. What do you think, Andy?
I agree with the part about him facing lesser defensive backs could be a big help, and maybe some lowering, you know, limiting the playing time maybe helps with the injuries. So I'm rooting for him to have a good season. I always like the guy, but there's not much I could say to defend Eli's 2013 campaign. So I'm going to stay off of that one.
Thanks, Andy. A lesser man would have mentioned, would have just said 17 and 1. I know a guy that would have said
17 and 1. Stop it.
So, and speaking about the Colts, I mean, my personal opinion, I am not as high on this team as others. It really comes down to luck for me. If he needs to be stratospherically good, I mean, even better than he has been. And I think he's capable of that. Is it going to happen this year? I don't know, but I think again, I don't think they're really an 11-5 team. I think it's a product of the division in a lot of ways. The defense stinks. I mean, and they
didn't really get any better this year.
No, and I mean their big defense. What they did on defense, they re-signed Vontae Davis, which was important. They needed to do that, but I mean he was the he's the main guy in a secondary that got absolutely lit by Dwayne Bowe and Alex Smith in that playoff game. As Cowboy Senior pointed out, Bethea's gone. Laron Landry shouldn't even be playing safety anymore. I mean, he can't cover anybody. He should make the Thomas Davis move to linebacker. And that's my thought. So they're an interesting team. They're a fun team to watch, and having a guy like Luck is great. I mean, it's a shame that they traded that first round pick for Richardson, because they could have really used someone on defense with that pick.
DeQuil Jackson is pretty good.
Yeah, he's an improvement. I don't think he's going to fix that defense.
He's going to help the middle of the D, even the run defense.
It's coming
along with maybe covering tight ends over the middle and whatnot.
If I'm not mistaken, he's coming off a pretty nasty injury, correct? Mm. Yeah, I mean he was fantastic for Cleveland last year.
Still better than what they had.
Oh, absolutely.
And to be honest, in this division, if they don't go 6-0. It'd be criminal, honestly.
I mean, maybe they can move Richardson over to middle linebacker. That guy can't seem to avoid anybody. Pretend like you want to get by the guy, Trent, and he'll tackle him every time.
I can't wait until the end of the year.
All right. So
26th ranked rush defense in the NFL last year, and if you continue listening, we're going to go through the teams that they got to play twice each. And they still had the 26th worst rushing defense in the NFL last year, despite playing these ridiculous teams. So,
right, but
their defense is pretty bad.
Those ridiculous teams had some pretty good running backs, though.
Yeah.
Chris Johnson.
Yeah, with nobody to block for him. Yeah.
Arian Foster, Maurice Jones-Drew.
Yeah, a shell of what he was.
True, but, I mean,
I mean, you're not going to get any easier than that division.
Well, the AFC East might have something to say about that. Well, I don't know.
All right. Let's move on to the second place team in the division last year.
Do we have to?
Tennessee Titans. So their big acquisition in the offseason, which I really liked, and I know the roster may not look that great, but I really believe in Ken Whisenhunt. I think he's a fantastic coach, and he's going to do wonders for that team. He brought that Arizona Cardinals team, who I'm very familiar with from my time out there, to a Super Bowl. I mean, that's the guy can coach. The guy can flat out coach. And if anyone's going to fix Jake Locker, it's Ken Whisenhunt. They have some good young talent at receiver with Kendall Wright, who showed the beginnings of being a Welker-esque kind of reception guy, 8, 9, 10 receptions a game. Justin Hunter has a ton of physical talent. And you have a placeholder there, Nate Washington, who's not bad. Delanie Walker was a good tight end last year. Whisenhunt loves to use the tight end. I think he can take another step up this year. And the aforementioned Chris Johnson is gone. While he had the game-breaking speed, he got stuffed a lot and left the. You know, he's not exactly get what's blocked for you. He's either, he's either stuffed at the line. 10 carries for 11 yards, then he breaks off a 50-yarder. So with the combo now of I hate to even say this guy's name, but Sean Green.
Don't say it. Don't say it, Ron.
Sean Green as part of a. If he's just the bruiser and he's not just the lead guy, he can play the part of the bruiser. He's good around the goal line. And their rookie, Bishop Stanky, I think is going to be good in space, kind of a Gio Bernardi type of a type of player. But I think this team really, it comes down to Locker. If Locker can progress, I think he's got a lot of physical talent. He's not the most accurate guy in the world, to say the least. But I think he's gritty, and I think they could make some noise. I truly think the Titans could make some noise. So, Keith, what do you think about Tennessee?
I think they're going to finish behind the Colts. But, like you said, I do agree with you. Nate Washington, Hunter, Kendall Wright, Sankey. We'll see what happens. Sean Green's a lost cause. I'm sorry. Third down back at best. Maybe come in and get your goal line back type. You know, right. Third and two. Maybe get your first down. The one guy you didn't mention, though, Dexter McCluster.
Yeah, it's another good
one. Was a big part of Kansas City last year. I mean, this is a, you know, one of them hybrid kind of guys where, you know, he can make 50, 60 receptions a year. You know, we'll see. They got, what, Michael Ola. They're now playing right tackle.
Yep.
So the offensive line is a little more improved. We'll see what happens. But Jake Locker, I kind of liked him. I've always have. He hasn't amounted to anything yet.
He's hurt.
We'll see.
He's got a lot of injuries.
He's growing. It's what, his third year in the league?
Yes. And so, very much a make or break year for Jake.
Last year he was kind of screwed with really no receiver. Kenny Britt screwed them last year. You know, whether it was injuries or just his head being up his ass. you know, he didn't show up to play, and that, you know, that hurts when you lose your number one receiver. You know, whether, like I said, whether it was injury or just the inability to be in the game. But I don't know. I still think this division starts and ends with Indianapolis. Tennessee might give them a run for their money, but I doubt it. I really don't.
Cowboy Senior, how about Tennessee on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah. Nothing great there again. Another team that has a lot of trouble stopping the run. Little better against the pass. They have decent cover guys like Jason McCourty. They've got the big hitter, Bernard Pollard. Not one of my favorite people, but he'll strike the fear of God and you're in the backfield. And Michael Griffin, it's a good pair of safeties. Excuse me. Jarrell Casey, who was the nose tackle last year and had 10.5 sacks, they're saying in camp that they're moving him to the outside more to help him become even more of a pass rusher. So he could definitely... he could definitely be a playmaker for them. Wesley Woodyard is a real solid guy, inside linebacker. But even with him, they do have trouble stopping the run. They're pretty good against the pass. Their defense is fair, probably as good as there is in this division. Offensively, the problem, you know, we say Jake Locker is, you hate to say that he's a big key, but the other answer after him is Charlie Whitehurst. And to me, Jake Locker's biggest problem is he's had trouble staying on the field. When he plays, he's not that bad. But in the last two seasons, as he's been their starting quarterback, he's missed 14 games. So he goes down and they go to Whitehurst or rookie Zach Mettenberger. That's a problem. I do like everything I'm hearing about Sankey. They're saying he really cuts well. He really catches the ball well. And they say he's already very accomplished in blitz pickup, which is outstanding for a rookie back.
That's big.
I mean, these are all of these things are the reason they made him the first running back taken in the draft last year. I think he could come up and be a really good player in this offense. I agree with everything you guys said about Sean Green. And Dexter McCluster's a real nice third down back. There's another back that can catch the ball out of the backfield, so that'll be helpful. But I'm not saying they're real good, but they've got potential. I don't see them beating out the Colts, but you know they could make a run. And their biggest improvement, I'll echo what Cowboy said. Ken Wisenhunt, excellent coach. Mike Munchak, a ridiculous joke of a coach. And they had him there for 3 years. So that's a huge improvement, and you never know. And this is football. Coaching's big.
If you never know,
this could be a decent team. There's always a team that surprises, and maybe Tennessee's the team that's going to surprise and go 9-7 or something. That wouldn't floor me that much. Big key is if Locker can stay on the field. You can't have him missing 7 or 8 games with what they have behind him. Offensive line, those tackles are real strong. Keith mentioned Michael Orr. They also have that first-round pick, Taylor Lewin from Michigan. There's a monster, a beast at right tackle, and another good tackle in Michael Roos. So there's some good plots in this team.
Yeah, as of now, Lewin isn't even starting for them. And I think when talking about their defense, the thing that important thing to mention is they're switching to a 3-4,
right.
And they brought in a couple of older. They had trouble with the pass rush a little bit last year, and so they brought in, I believe, Sean Phillips, Cameron Wimbley, two guys who have done it before. Phillips a little more recently, but I think those guys, both as kind of situational pass rushes, is going to give them some room off the edge. So I like Tennessee, and based on what I've seen at Charlie Whitehurst, if Locker goes down, I would just throw Zach Mettenberger in there. They drafted him.
Whitehurst is garbage.
Mettenberger is a head case. I think he's coming off an injury, but he's got a big arm.
Is it safe to say Tennessee will go as far as Jake Locker takes?
Yes, I think
defensively they're going to be in games,
but he doesn't have to be.
Offensively, Jake Locker has to.
He doesn't have to be Andrew Luck.
No, but he can't be. You know,
he can't be injured. That's the biggest.
Well,
thing.
He can't be injured, and he can't be
so much.
He can't be an idiot. He can't be Kerry Collins.
Right.
You know, he's got to protect the ball, not throw interceptions, not fumble.
Use his legs.
Right. You know. He's got to progress basically, which I thought he was doing all right, and then he got hurt, and
that's the problem.
So one of the guys,
he comes back, and Kenny Britt, like he said, you know. He doesn't want to play anymore.
When Locker's right, the guy he reminds me of most is Cutler. I think that's really his ceiling, okay. And he reminds me a lot of Cutler. A lot of natural tools, a little bit of a bonehead sometimes, but
he's got better legs.
He's a gunslinger.
He can run.
That's a good comparison.
So I think if Locker can give you an average Cutler season, that this team could very much surprise. Okay. And I think that's probably his ceiling. Andy, you agree with that assessment? You got anything to add on the Titans?
I don't think they're going to be very good. I don't really like Locker. It might be irrational. I mean, he had some really good games last year, but he's never really stayed healthy. And the one thing I'd point out, as much as I like Ken Wisenhunt and I enjoyed that Cardinals Super Bowl season, he hasn't been very good. He doesn't have a good record developing young quarterbacks. And I feel like it's not going to go too well for him and Jake Locker this year.
It's a good point, Andy, because that Cardinals team, prior to Warner coming in, he had drafted Matt Leiner, who was one of the bigger busts of the last 15 years.
And so wasn't that the only season that Wisenhunt was above 500? Oh, no, I guess there was a couple of 500s and a 9-7 in there.
Right. So, the interesting team. Interesting team. So we're going to break from the norm a little bit here. We usually go in order of finish of last year, but I think my feelings on Jacksonville are well chronicled, and I'm the host of the show, so we're going to pretend that they finished last, and we're going to talk about the Texans next.
Okay.
The Texans. So 2-14, they won their first two, they lost their last 14. In a way, I like it. If you're going to go, I mean, they were considered them and the Colts were the class of the division coming into the season. They made the playoffs the year before. And, I mean, we're pretty much a perennial contender, very good team. If you're going to go down, why go 8-8, right, Andy? Go down in flames, get you Davion Clowney.
Is that a not-so-subtle Giants dig there?
My inner Jeff Machado. Matt Schaub is gone!
It's true.
Positive.
It is a bit...
No, he liked Matt Schaub.
So this division has been described as Indianapolis and everybody else, and I think we're looking at it from last year's lens. In the NFL, that's not how things work. Yep.
True.
Everybody starts out 0-0, and Houston, whatever could have possibly gone wrong for them last year, went wrong, right? If you look at their personnel, particularly on defense,
yes.
I mean, they're trotting out J.J. Watt and Clowney. If Clowney is what he's supposed to be, I mean, you could have... I mean, that is a ferocious defensive line. You have Cushing, who's a fantastic linebacker who was hurt. He gets hurt a lot, granted.
Always hurt.
Jonathan Joseph, who is top 10 cornerback in the NFL.
Getting old.
Yep. But the defense has the pieces. Offensively, Arian Foster, when he's healthy, great running back. Now they lost Ben Tate, but Andy can speak about the guy they brought in, Andre Brown, who I think is better than Ben Tate. If you put them next to each other, I would guaranteed. Both guys are brittle as hell. Uh-huh. I think Brown's just a flat out. I think he's a better player than Ben Tate, especially for that. You know, he'll give you a little more than Ben Tate. Ben Tate was more of an Arian Foster clone, where it's not as though they. He's not giving you anything on third down. He's not that kind of guy. You know, it's either he's a first and second down back. Foster, in his youth, was more of a third down guy, but I think they'll be able to work Brown into the mix. He's got good hands. He's accomplished as a pass protector. Andre Johnson held out. Now he's not holding out, so he's back. Nuke Hopkins going into his third year, you know, the third-year wide receiver thing. Supposedly he has been lighting it up in camp, and he's a talented kid, which leads us to the one big question that I have for this team. You have a good roster with good players, some of veteran players like Foster and Johnson and Cushing, guys that you know, may not have a ton of tread left on the tires. How the hell do you go into the season with Ryan Fitzpatrick as your only quarterback? How do you let that happen? So someone else chime in, because it just frustrates the hell out of me.
Well, that's when you take Clowney with the first pick, this is what you end up with.
But they had opportunities to trade up for, like, Bridgewater or Manziel, and they didn't do anything.
They could have, but I think he has a plan. I think, honestly, I think he wanted to trade for Ryan Mallett. That's my opinion.
Which would have been just as freaking bad. I mean, you don't know.
It's better than Fitzpatrick, though, right?
Yes, maybe, but for the future. But for this year, I don't think that, I mean, even what about Vic? Why wouldn't you go and get Vic? I mean,
Michael Vick sucks. That's why.
He's a lot better than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
For how many games?
Right. Well, five. I'm saying if
till he yanks a hamstring or he gets his shoulder dislocated. Yeah, Michael Vick is not a quarterback.
How about Josh McCown? He's better than Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He sucks too.
Keith's tough.
I'm just saying. I mean, Fitzpatrick. Hey, he's smart. He's got a Harvard education. He knows how to get out of the way. He knows when to go down, when to throw the ball away. I know, you know.
Andy.
He's not that good. Whatever.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, he has moments where he is good. He's wildly inconsistent. He's an interception waiting to happen. Andy, what do you think?
I had thought that I was the biggest Ryan Fitzpatrick fan on the planet until Keith started talking.
I'm not a fan, by the way. I'm just goofing because I know he's a Harvard guy, so...
No, I don't think he's as terrible as he's made out to be, but he's a below average starting quarterback. And like you said, like, how does that become your plan for the season? You know what I mean?
Right.
They had good draft precision. I don't blame them for taking Clowney. I would have done the same thing, but you know, with that early second round pick, you have some options as far as trading up for somebody else. And to go into the season with Fitzpatrick and what was Savage, the guy they drafted, it's a disaster to me.
Don't forget about Case Keenum.
Oh, and Case Keenum, sorry.
Bum. No, and I mean, but
maybe it just doesn't fit into their plans. Maybe they're not planning on being good this year, but I mean, football doesn't really work like that. You kind of have to go into every year thinking this could be our year, because you never know what's going to happen.
And this is exactly why Andre Johnson wanted out. So you look at the other guys in the league, the other teams that have quarterbacks like Fitzpatrick, right? Let's look at Oakland. They have the old Fitzpatrick from Houston. Matt Schaub.
Yeah.
So what's the big difference there? They drafted Derek Carr in the second round. They know they're going to not be very good this year, and he's a placeholder. What's another guy who's like Fitzpatrick? Matt Cassel, right?
Yeah. Right?
Very similar. Right. He's a placeholder for Teddy Bridgewater. Ryan Fitzpatrick is their A, B, and C. He's not a placeholder. I mean, unless you really believe in Tom Savage in the fourth round.
Hey, maybe Savage is all right.
Yeah. I mean, is that...
I guess stranger things have happened, but I have not heard one good thing about Tom Savage.
He's tall.
Yeah, that's about it.
How much did you hear about Tom Brady when he was at Michigan?
That's a fair point. That's why I said, you know, anything could happen, but I have no reason to believe it will.
Looking up to his mentor... And Belichick saying, watch this. I'm going to do the same thing.
Keith, come on, man.
No, I ain't looking.
That's like not saving for your, that's like not saving for your retirement and banking on winning Powerball.
I'm you know. Maybe they believe in Keenum.
They don't believe in Keenum. The only reason he's on that team is because he puts asses in the seats because he played in Texas.
I mean, is he really, though, or did he go through growing pains? What was Peyton Manning's record his rookie year? Remember?
Keith.
Seriously. I'm not comparing him to Peyton Manning. I'm just saying.
What was Spurgeon wins?
What
record?
Did he do? I guarantee you, Peyton Manning had more interceptions than he did touchdowns. His first season in the NFL. Okay. So maybe they believe in Keenum. Maybe they saw enough from him that where. Hey,
no,
we can
I think
build on that.
The problem is they believe in Fitzpatrick. There's no question about it.
Do they, though?
Hey, I'll tell you what. If you're going to believe in anybody, believe in the smart guy, right?
There's a...
He's got a Harvard education.
Cowboy Senior's going to chime in here. Right. I mean, I feel like I'm fighting against two
go,
crazy
Rod,
people.
Go,
oh, it's just a minor point, but maybe they plan on basing their offense more on Arian Foster and Andre Brown. If you're running the ball real effectively, all of a sudden Ryan Fitzpatrick gets a lot better.
Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. Remember that.
Play action, and your teams are up respecting the run. Now you've got Hopkins and Johnson running down there, and almost anybody could get it to them. I'm not saying that's their plan for the future. I don't know. You know,
I
have faith in Bill O'Brien. I think he's got to have a plan.
I think my opinion.
Ask me what the future plan is. I don't know. Might be somebody that's not there yet. We don't know. But maybe they're going to be a power running team for the most part.
I don't think they had any.
Clowney steps up, and maybe they're going to try and be a physical team. You know, when they were good a few years ago, what was the big knock on them when they got to the playoffs? They were a team without a heart. They'd get crushed by a physical team. They wouldn't show up in the playoffs. Maybe he's going to try and instill an attitude this year.
Yeah. They were a power run.
They were defensive.
They're going to run.
Right.
And Fitzpatrick is going to play, quote, smart, make good decisions, hopefully. And maybe we'll be okay. I'm not saying that's the future. I'm saying that could be the philosophy. They're already talking about how Andre Johnson said there's way more discipline with the veterans in camp. It used to be just the rookies had to deal with a little discipline. With O'Brien, he's right there. Oh, he's right in everybody's face. He's tough on everybody. And Andre Johnson said, I love it. Maybe with that comes, football's a physical sport. We're going to be a more physical team. We're going to run the ball, play defense, throw a play action pass every once in a while, and maybe we'll be okay. I'm not saying they're going to be good. I'm saying it's a possible philosophy.
Yeah, two words. I mean, Andy, do you want to say it or do you want me to? He just described Greg Schiano. To a T. Discipline. Nah, we're going to treat you like freaking 12-year-olds.
No,
the team's going to quit on him.
Schiano took it to a military level.
That
was ridiculous.
So there's only one Bill Belichick.
Right, okay. And then, you know what? I wanted to say that as well. Bill O'Brien is looking up to his idol, Belichick. I'm going to be just like you, Bill. There's a difference, though. Belichick has won. He can do what he does. Bill O'Brien can't. Who knows? By week four, they might be doing the same thing Tampa Bay did to Schiano.
So my
fuck you, get away from me. I don't want to hear your bullshit no more. But I will, you know, give him a chance. Let's give him a chance.
I mean, I agree.
And, you know, maybe his plan was, hey, we're not going to win this year. We're going to build for the future.
So, yeah,
bottom line,
we're not going to
play good defense. We're going to give teams, you know, a hell of a run for their money. But I don't think we can win. We're not going to settle for Michael Vick. We're going to wait. And, you know, maybe next year.
Maybe
there's a quarterback on the horizon that he knows is going to be a free agent where he can grab him.
We're not going to win. We're playing for the future, but we're not going to trade Andre Johnson. We're going to take a hard line with 33-year-old Andre Johnson.
No, you know what? If the team gave them the right offer, they'd trade him tomorrow.
Yeah, I think they can't get anything from him. That's the big problem.
For an offer is a fourth-round pick. Yeah. I guarantee you if
for the future,
Cleveland calls tomorrow and says, hey, guess what? Josh Gordon suspended for the year. We want Andre. We'll give you our first-round pick next year. They'd pack his bags and take him to the airport.
First-round, yeah, obviously.
Okay.
Obviously. I mean,
well,
Terrell Owens right in the middle of his prime for a second round.
Why would you give him up for a fourth, fifth-round pick when you know he's more valuable than that?
Why is he more valuable? If you're not
because he's
going to
help me put asses in the seats and possibly win a game or two.
And he's a veteran presence.
And he can help my quarterback, and he can help my wide receivers.
Right.
You know, I mean, no,
so
I'm
if
not going to
so,
give him up for a bag of balls, but so if you want to overpay, sure, you can have him.
So if you guys were running the Texans.
Richard Seymour. Do you remember Richard Seymour getting traded from the Patriots?
Yeah, because Al Davis, I mean, we talked about this last week. Al Davis was dead.
Again,
first round pick. It was the stupidest trade in the
history
of football.
Do you think Richard Seymour was worth a first round pick when he was traded?
Definitely not.
Okay, why did they trade him? Because they got a first rounder.
Right.
If Cleveland calls and says we'll give you a first rounder, Miami calls and says we'll give you a second rounder, maybe they think about it.
Yeah.
Belichick's calling saying, "Hey, we'll give you our last pick next year if you want to get rid of him. Maybe we'll give you Ryan Mallett with him." You know, that's so it. I'm that's really all they're getting. So they're not going to get rid of him for a bag of balls for nothing. So
we can.
That's why he's still there.
I'm looking forward to Ryan Fitzpatrick's first Pro Bowl appearance. No, let's move on to. Let's move on to Jacksonville.
He is wicked smart, though.
Jacksonville, 4-12 last year. Actually, finished the season. I believe they were 0-8. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, I believe so.
Season 4-4, so some signs of life there. I'm on record with destroying the Blake Bortles pick. I think it was not the right thing for them to do. That we've gone over that ad nauseum. Gus Bradley's a good coach. I think he's a good coach. I think they're trying to do the right things. I think the roster is just so bad that it's just going to take some time. I like the fact that they didn't pay Maurice Jones-Drew and brought in Toby Gerhardt, who's going to give you the same thing for younger fraction of the cost, right? Cecil Shorts is a good receiver. They drafted Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, who both look like good receivers. The defense isn't completely horrible. I still see it kind of a JV team here. If there's one team in the whole NFL that I think has zero hope of being that worst to first team, I think it's the Jacksonville Jaguars based on their roster. But Andy, what do you think?
Yeah, there's not much to like here. I mean, I don't like Bortles, like you said. You know, the receiving core has some potential maybe, but I mean, Cecil Shorts isn't a number one receiver, and the rookies, who knows when they'll be ready. And, you know, they had some signs of life last year, but I don't think this is a good team, and I don't think there's any reason to think they're going to improve this year.
Cowboy Senior?
Yeah, I think they're terrible. You know, what else can you say? You look at the roster, and they are terrible. At least they seem to be in tone with that reality. They've already said, they're saying that they don't plan on playing Bortles at all the entire season. They plan on letting him sit in back of Chad Henne and learn. Which is probably the best thing. I mean, if they obviously they believe in the guy, draft them as high as they did. So why feed him to the Wolves? Their offensive line's terrible. They've already got injuries on it with Beatles and oh man, and the receivers are all supposedly all banged up in camp. It's all we're hearing coming out of their camp. It's like an epidemic of hamstring injuries with the young receivers. The only guy that's supposedly looking good is Marquise Lee. Even Shorts has had hamstring issues. The defense is terrible.
Not a whole lot to like here in Jacksonville. Yeah,
there you go in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, this is the worst team in the NFL.
On paper.
Plain and simple. Yeah,
Oakland might have something to say about that.
Yeah. Even worse than the Raiders.
We'll see.
Oakland, as we talked about last week, Oakland's roster is way, way better than the Jaguars.
But are they as well coached?
Probably not. I do like Gus Bradley, and I think they're, you know, the Jaguars' defense, just based on him and they're young, they could get better this year. I love the line. We're gonna let Blake Bortles learn behind Chad Henne. Just don't let him hang out with Henne too much. He doesn't actually want to learn anything from Henne. he can learn how fast the NFL game is by watching Henne get
murdered
pick after pick. And
I think Henne and Bortles will probably play the same amount of games this year, you know, which however way it comes, maybe Henne starts the first three, Bortles comes in, Henne replaces him, Bortles finishes the season.
They say they don't want to do
way,
that.
No, he's going to play. Henne's not going to make it through the whole season.
Right. That's it. Even then, right. I mean, they're so gun-shy because of what happened with Gabbert. They think that
let me say this for the record. Is the biggest pussy quarterback I've seen in my life. He makes Tony Eason look like Iron Man. Okay? I'm telling you something. This guy was, in his head, he had that you're supposed to take a three-step drop, count to four, throw the ball. He would go, 1, 2, 3, 4, bam, throw the ball. He was a pussy. The linebackers come at him, the any kind of tight pressure, he'd fold. He'd throw the ball right to the opposite team. That guy was the worst quarterback I've ever seen in my life.
So, high draft pick. And so, Andy, we'll rehash this. Andy and I talked about this in our NFL draft recap on our sister podcast on Place to Be Nation, The Extra Point. But some of the similarities between Bortles and Gabbert are pretty eerie in that.
Let me ask you this. Does Blake Bortles have a pulse? Does he have a
heart? Keith, let me finish. So, both guys, Blaine Gabbert had the look, right? He had the size, he had the arm strength. The reason
he worked out warrior, I believe, too. Right?
The reason he didn't know how to take a three-step drop is because he played his whole college career in the shotgun spread offense. Okay, he was never under center in college. Blake Bortles, never under center in college. Blake Bortles, the knock on him, I mean, he's got the look. He's 6'5", he's got a gun. The knock on him is that his mechanics break down under pressure.
Oh, wow.
Okay,
that
so...
That sounds like repeat to me.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, I mean, we could call Gabbert a pussy. I mean, but a guy who's never... I mean, I don't think Blaine Gabbert's good at all, but he was thrown into the worst possible situation in that he was, you know, he's a guy who's never... A guy like that who's played his whole college career in the spread offense that has to sit and has to learn the NFL game. He got forced into action early, sitting behind center, which he'd never done before, behind the worst offensive line in the NFL. It was like David Carr 2.0 when he was with the Texans. So if they, and they're so gun shy about that happening again, that I think even if Henny goes down, that the third stringer's going in there. I don't think they play Bortles this year.
If that's the case, then they should, because I tell you what, even, I'm sorry, Gabbert had 3 years to learn. Maybe the first year, you got an excuse. I've never seen this type of rush
before.
Oh,
he's bad.
But last year, I remember it was a preseason game. I think they were playing the Bears, and Lance Briggs did an interview afterward and said, I've never seen a quarterback's eyes light up like Gabbert's did. He wanted no part of the rush. He would literally snap the ball and throw it just so he wouldn't get hit.
It's like a Pavlov thing. You know, he got it. And I mean, David Carr is another good example of that. I think he had a lot of tools, and he was just ruined. His first year in the league, he got sacked more than anybody else, and he was just ruined. And I mean, he's proved to be.
You've never been hit like that, and then all of a sudden you get hit by somebody 300 pounds. And
we'll see, because Gabbert's going to be able to realize any of that natural ability as he's in the. He's playing.
Bortles, you mean?
Gabbert. I'm talking
about. Oh, sorry.
Gabbert plays for San Francisco now. He's playing for Harbaugh. They gave up something for him. So Harbaugh must think that he can salvage him. And if anybody can do it, it's him. So we'll see. But all right. So this has been a spirited debate on the Dreck AFC South, as it's called. So
let's have a major positive about Blake Bortles. Have you ever checked out his girlfriend? Giselle has some competition now.
Come on now.
Cowboy Senior. Yeah. Put the kids away. Put the kids. Someone's had one.
No, I haven't. But.
Someone's been to the back room of the lounge one too many times tonight.
Bartender, we need another round.
All right, guys. So let's get our predictions in. I'm going. Keith's got me fired up over here. So
good. Let's go.
I'm going first. I'm going to pick. I want to do it, but I'm going to pick Indianapolis to win the division at 10-6. I'm going to pick Tennessee, also 10-6, to lose a tiebreaker.
What?
I like Houston at 8-8, which is exactly where they don't want to be. They would be 10-6 if they had a decent friggin' quarterback. And Jacksonville 1-15.
Wow. Okay, I'll go next, I guess. I'm going Indy. 12-4. Tennessee in second place at 7-9. Houston, same record, 7-9. And Jacksonville, 5-11.
Let's save the Cowboys Senior for last, Andy. You're up.
I'm going to go with Indy, 10-6. Houston, 8-8. Tennessee, 6-10. And Jacksonville, 3-13.
So, everybody, drum roll, please. Andy did not pick the finishes last year for the first time in the history of the Sports Lounge. Hey, Andy! Hey!
This is a big moment for me. Thank you.
And Cowboy Senior.
11-5 again. Second place, Tennessee. 8-8. Third place, Houston. 6-10. And last place, Jacksonville. 0-16.
Wow.
Whoa! Holy shit.
Cowboy Senior doesn't mind going out on a limb.
That's not that much of a limb. Look at that team.
It's only happened once.
That's a limb.
All right, guys. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back with some MLB trade deadline talk where we can discuss some of the predictions we had last week for that and see who the winners and losers were. In the meantime, take a listen. There are some other great podcasts here on placetobenation.com that you should definitely listen to, whether it's pop culture, sports, or wrestling that you're into. It's a great, great site with great podcasts, and we'll be back in a jiff.
Me and Roger are going in the octagon.
Later.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, we'll be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vandenberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Welcome back to the Sports Lounge. I hope you enjoyed the break, and I hope you enjoyed that last segment as much as we did. I mean, my blood is still boiling over here from arguing with MLB and NFL expert and extremely opinionated Keith Schmidt, president of the Ryan Fitzpatrick Fan Club. So now we're going to turn to Keith's area of true expertise, because obviously it's not football, which is Major League Baseball. And we had probably the most exciting trade deadline of the last decade. It was a lot of fun, a lot of big names moving, some teams really stacking up for the playoffs. In particular, the A's and the Tigers both have all-star teams pitching wise at this point in the American League. So I'm going to turn it right over to Keith, and what we're looking for, Keith, is your input as far as winners, losers. And we'll discuss that. We'll just discuss this as we do. We're going to keep it mellow this time because the Cowboys tired. I can't be punching holes in my desk.
I can't be what you're stammering about. Listen, okay, winners. We'll start small. We'll say the Baltimore Orioles. They got Andrew Miller from the Red Sox. Dominant lefty coming out of the bullpen. Not a starting pitcher, but great bullpen guy. Extremely tough on lefties, but can still get right-handers out. It strengthens their bullpen. I mean, Baltimore doesn't have the starting pitching staff like an Oakland, Detroit, you know, teams of that stature. But what they do have, their pitchers go out, they give you 5-6 innings. So if they can go 6 innings, now you're bringing Andrew Miller in the 6th, 7th inning, and you still got the rest of the bullpen to follow, right? The guys they already had, Tommy Hunter and Zach Britton and whatnot. So I think they won because they didn't give anything up for Andrew Miller. I mean, a minor league prospect, who knows what happens with this guy, Gonzalez, I think his name was. That's one. The Oakland A's, I think, were the big winners in things. Well, actually, they're runner-up. They're in second place. They got John Lester from the Red Sox. John Lester is, in my opinion, one of a handful of pitchers in the major leagues that you can consider a true postseason ace. There aren't many of those. I mean, every team has an ace pitcher. Not many teams have a guy like Lester.
Who's proven it.
He's proven. He's done it in two different postseasons. If I'm not mistaken, he has the record for the lowest ERA in World Series play in history. If I'm not mistaken. I believe you are right about that.
I'm pretty
sure I read that somewhere.
Under one.
Now, you're teaming him up with Jeff Samardzija, who's a damn good pitcher. Who knows if he can do it in the postseason. We haven't seen that yet. He hasn't had the opportunity. Same thing with Sonny Gray.
Got lit up yesterday.
Today he got lit
today,
up. But everything you've seen so far, he's a great pitcher, but we'll see if he has the gas in the tank when it comes to the postseason, right? Let's see. Who else do they
have?
Scott Kazmir, lefty. Another lefty. He's had an up-and-down career, but more up than down, let's say that. And he's been pitching lights out so far this year. And you got Jason Hamill as your number five. I mean, you won't need him. And he'd be coming out of the bullpen in the playoffs.
And Jesse Chavez.
And you got Chavez as well. Plus, their bullpen is pretty good, right, with Doolittle at the back end.
Oh, absolutely.
So I love Oakland staff. Now, with Oakland, they did give up their cleanup hitter. You win assessment. Some people don't think that's a big deal. Others do. I know when the trade first happened, people in Oakland were up in arms about it. They didn't want Lester. They wanted to keep Cespedes. Maybe after they see him pitch a few times, they'll change their mind. But that is a big blow. You know, you take your cleanup hitter out. I mean, you know, he's not the, you know, let's not mistake him for Ted Williams. But he's a power hitter. He puts fear in the pitcher's eyes. When he comes up and his runner's on base, they're very careful with him. You don't have that anymore. Now you slide in a guy like Brandon Moss or Josh Reddick into the cleanup role. Maybe that doesn't have the same effect as Cespedes coming to the plate. But as we all know, in the playoffs, pitching wins. And now we go to the biggest winner, in my opinion, the Detroit Tigers. They got David Price for Drew Smyly and Austin Jackson. Are you kidding me?
Highway robbery.
Are you kidding me? Austin Jackson is a good center fielder, good player, still young, still up and coming. He's going to get better. Drew Smyly, you know, he's what, 25 years old, good pitcher, but neither one of them guys are worthy of David Price.
So you basically gave up a guy who's going to, at best, be a solid number two hitter in the lineup. And if Smyly really pans out, he could be the third starter on a decent team. Agree with that?
Possibly. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And that's what they did. And they got, you know, arguably the best. No, not arguably. The best pitcher available on the free agent market with an extra year to go. It's not like it's a rental. Like John Lester's a rental. 2 months, see you later. He's going somewhere else unless you resign him. David Price still has another year. So you traded Austin Jackson and Drew Smyly for two postseasons out of David Price. That's a steal. Dave Dombrowski is my hero. Okay? Let's put it that way. You've got the three reigning Cy Young winners on the same staff. Price, Scherzer, Verlander. Good luck. Good luck, American League.
I mean, and if the playoffs started today, the crazy thing is Verlander might be in the pen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the...
Annabelle Sanchez and Rick Porcello, who are probably pitching better than Verlander. I mean, obviously,
stacked.
You know, I don't think Brad Ausmus would do that. Verlander probably start game three, but you're right, though.
If the series is tied 1-1, he might not. Honestly, I mean, the way Sanchez is pitching,
we'll see.
You gotta. I did, but my take, I love what Oakland's doing, swinging for the fences.
Yes.
I don't think a lot of GMs would have had the balls to make that trade. Especially Cespedes provided that team. I mean, he's really the only real star power on the team, right? He's won two home run derbies. He's putting asses in the seats.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you look at his numbers, there's a little more maybe a tad overrated. We could say that, right? Based on his home, you know.
So he's
not a superstar at this point. I mean, yeah. in numbers, he's not a superstar, but it was a very good haul for the Red Sox, allowing the Red Sox, instead of doing the traditional thing and trading for prospects, it allows them to kind of punt this season and rebuild on the fly, and I like that too. Yep. But in order to keep up with Detroit, I mean, they had to do that.
Especially now, they got Price.
I mean, the American League, I mean, I think pretty clearly it comes down to two teams, right? I mean, they have two teams. They have, you know, eight of the top 12 pitchers in the American League on two teams.
And I'm going to be very pissed off if this happens. Detroit and Oakland match up in the first round.
Which is possible. Yeah.
I will be very upset because
let's
just say Baltimore finishes with the best record. That means Baltimore plays the wild card team, and the two next best records play each other.
Right.
So you possibly could have Detroit Oakland first round playoff series, and that will. Oh, man, I'll be so upset about that.
Really scary thing is if the Angels catch Oakland, they could end up in a one-game playoff, even after all this all-in move.
True, but I'll tell you what, call it homerism, whatever you want, if John Lester's pitching that game, my money's on Oakland.
Yeah, the Angels don't have that. We've talked about this. They don't have
the lineup. They don't have the pitching. They have...
Who are they going to throw out there for that one game?
Garrett Richards.
Or Weave.
he's their best pitcher right now, Garrett Richards.
Right, because CJ Wilson has completely fallen off a cliff. I mean, he's gone all Clay Buchholz.
Garrett Richards has been their best pitcher. Jared Weave is pretty good. But, you know, he's not going to match up with the Aces. And even CJ Wilson at his best, still not going to match a Lester or a David Price kind of guy. He's just not going to do it.
And there's a month and a half left in the season.
True.
And I don't, with the A's, with this stacked pitching staff for the rest of the season, I don't see the Angels keeping up with them.
Well,
I know they're playing real good ball right now, but I don't see them keeping up with them for a month and a half. Not when the A's are sending a stud out there every single night.
The thing is, though, in the regular season,
you play other
you
teams.
You can hit your way to 90 wins.
Yeah, they're not playing each other.
Plenty of teams have done it. I mean, like you just said, when they play in each other, it's a different story. But when you're playing Kansas City and the White Sox and the Red Sox, you're going to win a lot of them games because they don't have real good pitching either. So, I mean, and their lineup is far superior. You know, even Oakland, I think the Angels lineup is far superior. Matter of fact, if you remember correctly, a couple weeks ago when we did the West, I picked the Angels to overtake Oakland for the division.
Right. But obviously,
will be even worse because now you're talking Oakland, Detroit, first round series, and I'm going to be upset about that.
The other thing that would kind of stink about that is, like I said, I mean, I like Billy Bean, and what he's done over there is nothing short of miraculous. I mean, with the payroll they have and stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's well chronicled, but I really, and you don't see this enough in sports. People play things close to the vest. People worry about their, you know,
perception.
They manage. GMs are constantly building their rosters just to try to not get fired, you know?
Yeah.
he took a risk. I mean, he put his chips to the middle, which doesn't happen too often. And for them to lose the division would just be freaking horrible. You know, I mean, it just in my opinion, I'm with Cowboy Senior. I think they're going to win the division, but you never know. I mean, you never know, especially with the A's. I mean, the Angels have a couple of guys in that lineup who, if they get, I mean, if Josh Hamilton gets hot at the right time, he can. I mean, he's a guy who can hit 15 home runs in a month. No problem.
Along with Trout and Pujols. I mean, come on. That's what I mean about the Angels. Mm. Their lineup is so good. And you know, at the last minute, they could score 8 runs a game for 2 weeks straight on hot streaks.
And I think
their pitching is well enough to keep them in those games.
6-5.
And by the way, the Angels bullpen has been completely reformed. Houston Street.
Yeah, great move, yeah.
They got Street. They got Jason Grilley.
Yeah, for Friar.
Right? Right. And, I mean, that was a great move. And they also got another one, lefty. Joe Thatcher, maybe? Maybe is that his name?
Dan Thayer.
Dale. Okay. Joe Thatcher was already there, wasn't he?
Right.
All right. Dan Thayer. But, you know, their bullpen is a lot better. So, again, like I was saying about the Orioles, their starters don't have to throw 7-8 innings. They're just gonna get 8 to the 6th, keep you in the game. Bullpen comes in, and then now, you know, it's a pretty dominant bullpen now. You know, Houston Street might be one of the best closers in the game. You know, he's got 30 something games. You know,
he's got that unhittable stuff.
You know? And you know what? He doesn't have 99 like Kenley Jansen or Chapman. But he puts that fastball where he wants it, and then he throws his off-speed stuff, and he catches you fooling, and, you know, you're swinging through it, and you got no chance against him. He's a great closer, so I think that's going to be a great race between Oakland and LAA to the end. I really do. I will say this, and I'm pretty confident in saying this. They're both going to make the playoffs. One of those two teams, though, is going to have to play that one-game playoff, and I will say this, God forbid, for their sake, it be against the Seattle Mariners. All I'm going to say.
King
because
Felix.
If things line up, and my favorite pitcher in the league, King Felix, Felix Hernandez, is pitching in that one-game playoff, I don't care who's pitching on the other side. It better be John Lester.
It's probably a 1-0 game.
It is over.
Be remiss, Keith, if I did that. I did pick it. This is for our fearless leader, JR. I know he's listening, and he would yell at me if I didn't say this. But I know you mentioned the Orioles. That the Miller move might be a winning move, but if you were a fan of the Orioles and you're watching the other teams, you're watching the Tigers acquire David Price, you're watching Oakland acquire John Lester and Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill, and you have that junk pitching staff, and you have prospects, how do you justify not at least getting somebody? I mean, in 2 years, they've gotten Bud Norris. I mean, it's a...
Okay.
I mean, JR always brings this up, and I tend to agree with him. It's got to be frustrating. I mean,
I'm sure it is. I will say this: John Lester and David Price were unavailable to them. If you're the Red Sox or the Rays, you are not going to give your best starting pitcher to someone in your division. So where he goes to, all right, let's just say the Red Sox, for instance. Lester is 2 months away from being a free agent. He goes to Baltimore and he falls in love with the city. And he re-signs there. It's your fault.
Absolutely.
You gave them to him.
They probably could have had Samardzija and Hamill.
Samardzija maybe, but Oakland struck quick. I mean, that happened on the 4th of July, that trade. So you can't blame them for that one. I mean, they never let the series, you know, the standings come down to it. You know what I'm saying? With Samardzija. Who else was traded? Starting pitcher, John Lackey, same thing. The Red Sox aren't going to give these guys to Baltimore, Toronto, Tampa. It's not going to happen. How often do you see in-division trades?
Steven Drew.
And that guy's a piece of shit. You want the $5 million salary? Here, you can have it.
So here's my
thing. What I'm trying to say.
Do you think the Rays, maybe not the Red Sox, do you think the Rays turned down Dylan Bundy and Gausman for David Price?
No, and I'm going to tell you why. I don't think Baltimore offered that to Tampa.
Exactly.
Same situation. I'm not going to give you my two best prospects and have to face them for the next 8 years. It's not going to happen. I'm going to trade them to the National League where I don't have to see them anymore. Maybe in the World Series. Maybe Interleague Series. That's it. You don't in division trades don't happen very often. If they do, it's like I said, Andrew Miller. Okay, here's a reliever you can have for 2 months. Good luck. Hope you win the division.
About Cole Hamels. He's probably available, right?
Now. Well, he was, but you know what? Ruben Amaro, dude.
Yeah, it's hard to tell with
him. On that team.
Bird, yeah. I'm saying the
Burnett, Hamels, Cliff Lee, Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Marlon Byrd, Jonathan Papelbon. That's 8 guys I just mentioned. That all should have been traded. All of them.
That's why I consider the Phillies the biggest loser of trade.
There you go. Thank you, Roger.
They didn't get rid of any of those, and then especially Cliff Lee, who maybe they could have, even if they had gotten a little something for him and been able to unload most of that salary. They don't trade him, and then his next start right after the trade deadline, he gets hurt again. He's done for the season. Then they couldn't give him away now unless they paid, and they're stuck with that salary for 2 more years. A lot of money.
Yep, that's
the Phillies were by far the biggest losers.
Absolutely,
by not being able to trade anything off. They were in kind of the same situation as the Red Sox. It's a lost season. At least the Red Sox went out there and did something.
Yep. The Phillies, in my opinion, I mean, like you said, biggest losers. You got to be kidding me. That's a lot. The guys I just mentioned, I guarantee you that adds up to $120 million, maybe more.
Yeah, and some of those guys are tougher to move than others. Like Howard would not be the easiest guy to.
No,
but Marlon Byrd would be very easy to move. I mean, he's cheap, and he's got 20
million.
Well,
he's not that cheap. They signed him to a pretty good deal.
Compared to Howard, I guess.
All of them. They could have traded every single one of them players.
What are your thoughts, Andy?
The problem is, they didn't didn't want
to. That's all right.
Sorry. Give me 1 second.
Go ahead.
They didn't A, want to eat the money, or B, they wanted a king's ransom in return. Ruben Amaro even made a statement that said, the other GMs weren't proactive, and they weren't coming at me. What do you want them to do? Back up a big truck to your door? Come on! You're the one with the shitty contracts. You're the one that's going to be proactive and say, hey, take this guy and give me this. You know, 2 nickels for a dime kind of thing. You got to be kidding me.
It's the guy holding the house that he paid $10 million for. Won't get out of it for 5 after the market crashes.
One more thing real quick. When we did the NL East, I said the Mets were like the worst organization ever. I'm sorry. I'm changing that. The Phillies. Ruben Amaro is a flat-out joke.
Flat-out joke. What do you think, Andy?
I am agreed on the Phillies. That was a disaster. My main question is, I don't understand how the Rays couldn't get more than that for Price, especially since they didn't have to trade him, you know what I mean? They could have maybe see if they could make a push for the wild card. They've been playing pretty well. And then see what happens in the offseason. They had the next trade deadline after that to see what they could get then. I don't see this deal blowing them over to the point where they're like, okay, yeah, we have to pull the trigger.
I agree with you, Andy.
Panic? It's happened last second.
Yes, I think, I think it was a panic move. And B, maybe they have more faith in Nick Franklin, Drew Smyly. And they got a shortstop prospect. I don't remember his name, but
I can't remember.
Supposedly, he's really impressive. What's his name? Adames? Willie Adames?
I don't know. That's right, yeah.
But, what's Tampa's GM's name?
Andrew Friedman?
Andrew Friedman. I'm pretty sure that guy's smarter
than us, right?
Talking on this mic right now.
Yeah.
So he must see something. Drew Smyly's 25 years old. He's a pretty good pitcher. Now, he's not David Price, and I don't think he will ever be David Price. But if he turns out to be a solid number 2, number 3, and Nick Franklin could be, a starting third baseman, starting second baseman maybe, and this kid at shortstop ends up panning out, maybe Maybe they made out. I do agree with you, though. I think if they would have waited till the end of the season, they could have got the same package. Okay. Or maybe more.
Here's a theory, okay, if you're the Rays. Right now, you don't want to trade for prospects that are gone, or you're going to wait 2 or 3 years for to arrive.
True.
Because you have a good team already. And, okay, we're going to go for it next year, kind of. That True. Philosophy. So that's number one. Number two, we're trading David Price because we can't pay him. So in the package of guys we're going to get back who are going to help us right away, we can't take anybody that we're going to have to pay a lot, or else we're going to be in the same predicament that we were in with Price.
Very true.
So we settled for this package.
Yep. Yep. And let's face it. Drew Smyly, when he was coming up, he was a prospect, right?
Yeah.
Everybody talked about, you know, Tiger's got a really good left-handed pitching prospect. And I'll tell you, he's thrown some games this year.
Oh, yeah.
In
no,
his rookie
I like
season.
Drew Smyly. Like
7
him.
Innings, 10 strikeouts, you know, games like that. You know, I mean, he could end up being a really good pitcher. And Nick Franklin.
They do wonders with pitchers. Let's
right,
face it.
Yeah. You're right. You're not yeah. kidding. And Nick Franklin wasn't that half bad himself, you know, in Seattle last season. I mean, he slumped this year. He hasn't had much playing time and whatnot, but he's not a bad player. And he, again, was one of those prospects, right? He was up on the list. So, I know, like I said, Friedman probably knows more than we do. We're sitting here saying he's a dumbass, but, you know.
Well, I don't
hate
the
show.
Navarro doesn't, so fuck him.
I mean, to Andy's point, I think what Andy would say to Cowboy Senior's rebuttal there is, if you're really trying to win next year, what do, Andy?
You just keep him.
Just keep him.
He wasn't going anywhere.
No, but
there was no urgency, I think. That's my main complaint. I don't hate any of those players I got. I don't think it's a terrible trade. It's just it seemed like odd timing. That's all.
So, I mean, I think part of what makes it look bad, too, is the perception is that the Red Sox got more for John.
Exactly.
In the exact same situation Price would be in next year.
I may say that the Red Sox got more for John Lackey than they did for Price, but not Lester. Listen, Cespedes is a nice player. He's only here for 1 year. That's it.
And we can pay him. The Red Sox can pay him if they want.
I don't know if anybody heard anything today, but there's this whole new biogenesis thing going on. They just made a whole bunch of arrests.
They arrested A-Rod's cousin.
And there's going to be some names coming out. And maybe Billy Bean is that smart where he said, watch this.
No way.
Let me dish him, because I know he's on the list. Who knows? That's speculation.
That's wild speculation.
just saying. I'm just saying.
If you're listening, Mr. Cespedes, Keith's not accusing you.
No, I like Cespedes. I like 52, man. I like him. I personally think he's going to be part of a package for Giancarlo Stanton in the offseason, but that's another story.
Why are they going to have him? I don't know.
They can sign him.
Marlins can sign him.
Yes, they cannot sign Giancarlo. Giancarlo Stanton is going to get north of $200 million. No doubt about it. If he stays healthy for the first half of next year, he's going to get $200 million plus.
Do you think
Robinson Cano type money. Cespedes, at his best, will get $80 million.
Do you think the Marlins want to pay him $80 million?
He will put people in the seats. He's of Cuban descent, and there's a lot of Cuban baseball fans in Miami.
And he plays with
a
flair.
And he's a superstar. Yeah. He's a superstar. To them, he's a superstar. And he is. He's not as good as Stanton, but he's half the price. Not even. And when he's coming along with, you know, I'm just throwing names against the wall here, but, you know, four of the Red Sox better prospects, yeah, you make that deal. In the offseason, not now, obviously. But
so
my opinion.
So, no, Ned, I mean, I've heard a lot of that, and I have nothing to disprove that theory. So I think Stanton's going somewhere. The Marlins probably aren't going to pay him.
They can't pay him $200 million. They absolutely cannot. And that means there's only a handful of teams who can. Seattle, Boston. I don't even think the Angels can, not with paying Pujols and Hamilton and Trout.
The Yankees could pay him.
The Yankees could,
but I don't think they have the... Andy's our Yankees expert. I don't know if they have what it takes to get him.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
He's also a nice fit in Fenway Park.
Are you kidding me?
Everything works with him in the Red Sox.
Right. Hey,
totally
I've been talking it since last offseason. It's taken a year longer. And you know what? I'm not the only one saying it.
No,
I've heard this over and over again, Stanton, Red Sox. The last time I heard this, Adrian Gonzalez, Red Sox. For 2 years, you heard it. Next thing you know, boom, Christ, big trade.
If it happens, we can only hope it turns out a little better than Adrian Gonzalez.
It's going to happen.
No, and I mean, that's a very – like you say, there's only a handful of teams that can afford him. So
and if I could add this, Giancarlo Stanton is the type of player you give Robinson Cano money to. Why?
Young.
He's 25 years old. Absolutely. He's not 30. So, at the worst, you eat the last year, maybe two, of his contract. Not like Cano. The man is going to eat 3 years of that deal. He's going to be a designated hitter doing nothing for 3 years of that deal. You know what I mean? He's going to be an old man.
Yeah.
But like Miguel Cabrera, worth every penny they paid him, right? Why? Because when they signed him, he was 26 years old.
Right. And
worth
every
penny.
You know, if you want the guy, you go into it, and it's only money, right? At the end of the deal, it's only money. You're giving him 10 years,
correct,
knowing you're getting six, and you deal with it.
I swear, if you sign Stanton, especially an American League team,
well, then he's a different kind of player too. Just a power hitters tend to age better than any other player.
He can DH for the last 4 years of his contract and still hit you 30 and 100.
Look at guys
by accident.
Look at guys, older power hitters. I mean, even a guy like Teixeira, who is just busted up. I mean, he's half healthy, and he'll hit 30 home runs. You know, I mean, it's...
Okay, here's another thing I'll add to this. And this has never been speculated or anything like that, but like you just mentioned, Teixeira. When was Teixeira's heyday? 4 years ago? 5 years ago?
Approximately, yeah.
What was going on back then? Same thing with Adrian Gonzalez and Sosa and Maguire and Iran. Giancarlo Stanton was never there for that. His rookie year, that's it. And he was a puke. He was a kid. None of that has ever been, you know, when he came into the league, that's when they were cracking down on all that stuff, right? Am I wrong?
Completely successful.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. I think Giancarlo Stanton is clear.
Maybe he's dabbled in it, but...
I don't have any reason to accuse Mark Teixeira. Dude, I mean, usually...
I'm not accusing him either. I'm just simply saying... But and his age as well.
Andy, do you have any names to add to that list? Andy's not a not
the
a,
PED
a,
list.
Yeah. Do you want anyone who comes to watch
if you want?
So Andy's a Yankee supporter. He's a New York guy. So for those counting on the podcast, we had Cowboy Senior call Eli Manning. Bum. And then Keith has now accused Mark Teixeira. He's going out on a limb that Mark Teixeira was using steroids.
No, I didn't. You said that. I didn't say that. I just said that. And he was in his heyday. That's all I asked.
It's a rhetorical question.
He was teammates with A-Fraud, so I'm just saying.
Fair and balanced.
Yep.
You know, I'm just asking.
Right, so I mean,
how did this become the Giancarlo?
Hey, and I'll tell you why. Here you go. You ready? David Ortiz has used steroids in his career.
Whoa.
Cowboy.
Let me just set that out. Allegedly.
Thank you, Keith. That makes us all. Cowboy Senior shaking his head. Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yes. He's just naturally.
Yes. Yeah, he's naturally. He naturally went from 17 homers to 55.
But naturally.
This is playing time.
I don't care. I hope they all do it.
We've gone through this before.
Yes,
so.
Yes, we have.
I mean, looking at things objectively after the trade deadline, great trade deadline. I think you guys would probably agree with me that there are three legitimate contenders for the World Series, unless some dark horse really shows their face, right? So the Dodgers, the Athletics, and the Tigers. I don't see anyone else winning it.
You don't like the Nationals?
Andy.
Those are the favorites.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy.
No, that was it. I think the Nationals are have at least a puncher's chance, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with that.
Don't count out the Orioles.
Don't count out the Cardinals.
Don't count out the Cardinals.
I wish I could count out the Cardinals. I'm so sick of the Cardinals.
Hey, last year, if you remember last season, how hot the Dodgers were going into the postseason. They still had Clayton Kershaw, the men amongst boys. What happened? The Dodgers whipped their ass.
Cardinals whipped their ass.
The Cardinals. Yeah. Sorry. We know what you mean. Cardinals whipped the Dodgers' ass.
They never looked that good. There's something about the Cardinals in the postseason.
They have the experience, an experienced team.
Similar to the Giants in that respect.
There you go.
Giants. You get they get in the playoffs and they tend to win it.
Lip into the playoffs and get out.
In order for the Cardinals to go and do what I just said, Yadier Molina has to come back healthy.
You know, come on, AJ. AJ's been playing all right.
World Series winner, AJ Przinsky.
Lost their catcher. I mean, it's a pretty good, decent guy to pick up off of scrap.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe.
I mean, it's night and day defensively, he's at least a decent stopgap. They had Tony Cruz playing every day.
Last segment, I said Blaine Gabbert was the worst quarterback I've ever seen. AJ Przinsky is the worst defensive catcher I have ever seen.
And possibly one of the worst human beings you've ever seen. From all accounts. I'll say that. I think he's known as like the biggest asshole in all of baseball.
He's just a jerk.
Ty Cobb.
I don't know. Hey, you know what I saw the other day that made me very happy? I saw the highlight of when he was a White Sox and they played the Cubs and he came across the plate. He scored a run and he smacked the plate. He hit Michael Barrett. And he smacked the plate like, I just scored. Michael Barrett got up and gave him a right hook to the jaw. And it was fantastic. I haven't seen that, and that's got to be 6, 7, 8 years
And all the White Sox were cheering him on.
No, it didn't matter. You know what? He might have even been here. The White Sox won a World Series. I don't even remember, but I know Barrett caught him with a clean right hook, and it was fantastic.
Awesome.
Oh, I loved it.
All right, guys, great, great baseball talk there. So let's pivot. And I mean, just so for the listeners to know, we're going to continue, even though we're not doing the divisions anymore, we're going to continue to have these baseball debates every single week. I think it's probably the best stuff we do right now. And I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I do. But I want to pivot real quick. We weren't planning on talking NBA, given that there's not much going on. But anyone who happened to catch what happened during the Team USA scrimmage, I felt like it was something that we should talk about. Really, really, it's a real shame. So if you didn't see it, the video's out there online. I mean, it's not for the squeamish. Basically, Joe Theismann on a basketball court. Paul George, just a young guy, rising star, you know, one of the best players in the league, just getting better, just had a horrific, horrific leg injury and brought up a lot of questions. So, and I don't want to discuss really how it's going to affect the Pacers next year. I mean, he's going to be out for the season. I mean, obviously, I think that pretty much eliminates any chance that they had of really contending. But one of the things you heard going into this USA basketball, you had a number of guys not play, right? So you had LaMarcus Aldridge and Kevin Love and Blake Griffin all bow out of playing for Team USA in the reason was, well, Kevin Love, a prime example, I don't want to get hurt. I don't want to get hurt and ruin my trade value. And I scoffed at that and said, you know, you can get hurt going outside. And, I mean, we play basketball once a week in Andy's driveway. And I know every time I go out there, I could break my leg. You know, it could happen. Probably not going to, but it could happen. And I said, you guys should play for your country. You're making yourself look bad. Does this change that opinion? This freak injury, does this, if you're, let's not say LeBron James, but someone a little less established, right? So another superstar, maybe Kyrie Irving, okay, in a couple years. If you're Kyrie Irving, you're coming into your own as one of the five best players in the league. Do you skip this because of this injury, Cowboy Senior?
No, I don't think so. I mean, injuries can happen. It's the way it goes. One thing you're going to see is, you'll never see a stanchion as close as that was the way they had to measure it after to see, and it barely qualified by an inch. I mean, with the kind of high-flying athletes you have out there, there's no reason to have that close to the baseline behind the basket. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You're going to see them take a closer look at that safety issue because that's really why this injury shouldn't have happened. But, I mean, that'd be like saying we're not going to have any more all-star games. We're not going to let anybody play in exhibition games. You know, you can get hurt anytime. You know, guys roll out of bed and rolled out of bed onto a glass and got hurt. A Red Sox player, oh, he's back up, a relief pitcher, I can't remember. Jim Lomborg broke his leg skiing. Robert Edwards, with that, they got rid of that stupid beach football. Yeah, that was totally stupid. But this, the guys, you know, they're doing what they do. They're playing basketball. That's what they do. They're basketball players. The one thing you'll see change is you won't see ridiculous, something as ridiculously blatantly bad for safety as that being right where it is, because these guys are flying. These are big-time athletes. That in any NBA arena, that thing is just way further back than that. That was really the issue, and it really is a shame, because right now, at the state of the NBA, in the Eastern Conference of the NBA, with it looking like Kevin Love's pretty much a foregone conclusion that he's going to go join up with LeBron and Kyrie over there in Cleveland, the only team with any chance in the East to contend with them was Indiana, and that's done now. So barring some ridiculous injury, we know who's representing the East in the NBA final before the season even starts.
Whoa.
Yeah, Chicago might have
seen you. What about the Bulls? I mean, Derrick Rose looks like he's back.
Yeah, you really believe that? No.
What?
There's no way the Bulls can beat that team. No way.
Wow.
Unless
I mean, the Bulls are – I mean, you don't think the Bulls with Derrick Rose at full strength are better than the Pacers? If you give the Pacers a chance, you have to give the Bulls a chance.
And I don't believe that we're going to ever see Derrick Rose play the way he did before.
Have you watched him? Did you watch that scrimmage?
Yeah, we'll see.
Over
the course of a season, we'll see.
Right.
I don't think
this is a guy.
I got a bit to add about the Olympics and stuff. My opinion, I think, you know, if you're LeBron James, you owe it to your country to play maybe twice. And then you pass the torch down to the next superstar. If you're LeBron, you shouldn't be required or even expected to play from your, you know, early 20s into your late 30s. Even though you're the best player on the planet, no. You play once, even one Olympics, that's fine. There's enough NBA players, enough superstars, where they could package 10 guys, 12 guys, and win every single season if they wanted to. So I don't think these guys have to play, you know, every single time the Olympics come around.
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan of the college guys doing it. And I mean, if I had my druthers, I would say send the college guys. If we lose, we lose. That's just me. Not because of injury, just because I think it's.
Well, the other teams are sending their pros, though, aren't they?
Correct. I mean,
so why not send us?
It was. I thought it was a little more fun. That's just me.
Well, that's because you like to see good games. You don't like to see ass whippings.
Yeah, I mean, the pros got their asses whipped a few times too.
Why though? Because they went in and it was party central for,
right.
for 8 years.
Been no problem since Krzyzewski's been.
No. As soon as they got a real coach that said, "Hey guys, this isn't party time Paris here."
Isn't it Larry Brown before? He's not a real coach.
No, he had no control over the team, obviously. If they lost, not with the talent they had, and they lost, are you kidding me?
It wasn't necessarily the coach, guys. So Jerry Colangelo, after they didn't even medal, right, in the Olympics, Jerry Colangelo took over the Olympic program and made it it's not just you show up for the Olympics and play.
Well, that's right.
It's a long, it's an all the time commitment.
And they made dream team. To just, like you just said, we can just show up and be any team, anytime, backyard, schoolyard ball.
Like I remember, the low point of the U.S. of the professionals in the U.S. Olympics was Stephon Marbury breaking the Olympic scoring record for United States. I don't know if I forget if it was in a loss. It was definitely the year they finished whatever it was, sixth or something. That was just terrible. But so, Paul George. Everybody here at the Spower Sports Lounge, Cowboy and the crew, we all wish you a speedy recovery. Want to see you back at full strength, and we appreciate you doing, going out there and representing your country. So, with that said, guys, this has been fantastic. A lot of spirited debate. We're going to go to one more break, and then Chad and I are going to do a quick MMA segment. But the Cowboy and the crew, we're going to be back next week for sure, with hopefully the same crew, with maybe Mr. Machado involved.
just to even spice it up more. But you know, this is a this is a crew that can't be controlled. So it's a pack of wild dogs.
I'm telling you, I'm taking the cowboy into the octagon.
So for Keith Cowboy Senior, Andy, thanks so much. Like I said, I'll be back shortly with Chad Campbell to do our MMA update. But hope you guys enjoyed these having these guests in the lounge as much as I did.
Cowboy.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers, and a fully stocked bar. Boneheads has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Richard and the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Welcome back to the Sports Lounge. So, I'm still unwinding a little bit after that display of craziness by that wild pack of dogs, Cowboy Senior and Keith. They got me all worked up. It was we were embracing debate here on the Sports Lounge. And it was a good thing. But we're taking things down a notch with the cool and collected Chad Campbell joining us in the lounge. How you doing, Chad?
Doing good tonight, Roger.
Good, good. So we're going to discuss our weekly MMA talk here. And it's kind of a lull in MMA right now. There's not anything coming up this week. But we did have MMA in the headlines yesterday or the day before, with Johnny Bones, John Jones, and Daniel Cormier. They'll be fighting in September, and they had a promotional, if we'll call it a press conference or whatever. It looked like it was in a mall.
It did. Escalators in the background.
Basically, both guys get in, they get introduced, they walk on stage, It looks like Jones throws his head up against Cormier's. Cormier didn't like it and pushed him. Jones comes back with a big left hand, and they spill off the stage. And, you know, this fight, Jones really looked like he got the better of it, because after they fell off the stage, it looked like Jones had him mounted and was raining down some ground and pound until they pulled him off him. But these guys don't like each other. I don't know how much of this was pipe in the fight or how much of it was real, but it certainly has me excited for the fight. How do you feel about it, Chad?
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of thing that can really spark some adrenaline into a fight and get some mainstream appeal. I kind of liken it to Frank Mir, Brock Lesnar, or Rashad Evans, Quentin Rampage Jackson, those type of grudge matches that I like. I mean, UFC is kind of interesting, where a lot of times I do like sportsmanship in almost all my other sports that I watch, but in UFC, sometimes with all the hugging and glove tapping at the beginning of rounds and stuff like that, you sort of welcome a pretty good bona fide blood feud between two guys, and that's what it seemed like here. I mean, I do think there was certainly some extra hyping of the fight. Cormier and Jones both are kind of wise to the hype game, but it was quite enjoyable to see them scruffle around.
Yeah, absolutely, especially with you know, a guy that you left off there was Chael Sonnen, the disgraced Chael Sonnen, but him against pretty much anybody.
He was
like this, and it's to your point, I love an MMA fight where that bad blood it shows itself in the ring or in the octagon a little more than some other sports. You know, a couple football teams hate each other while the game starts and they're playing football. The MMA guys hate each other. Sometimes they just go balls to the wall after each other. So hopefully that's what happens. And we're going to have plenty of time to break down this fight. But just my early thoughts on it are, I think Cormier is a...
He don't need to stay standing. I mean, I think that's what I saw from their little stare down.
I mean, I think, you know, and I think he's a fantastic fighter. I think he beats every other light heavyweight in the world. And, I mean, maybe easily, even Gustafson easily. The one thing with Jones, he's short. Cormier's short. And Jones has shown, against short guys, he knows what to do. He knows right. And Jones is wrestling. It's not quite as good as Cormier's. But I think from a defensive wrestling standpoint, Daniel's going to have a tough, tough time getting him down if Jones doesn't want to go to the floor. I have trouble seeing Cormier's path to victory in this fight.
Yeah, it's not a foregone conclusion, certainly, that even an Olympic wrestler like Cormier can get Jones on the ground. So right. That's kind of the big decider thing, if he's going to have a shot in the fight.
But Cormier's undefeated and basically untested. I mean, no one's even given him a fight. So
yeah.
You don't know. And then he's coming down. You know, he's a big guy coming down from heavyweight. It's just, I have troubles. I have trouble seeing, if they're standing, I have trouble seeing him winning the stand-up exchanges against Jones's reach. Cormier's a good boxer, but, I mean, he's not as good of a boxer as Glover Teixeira. And Jones stood right in front of him and beat him that way. And so Cormier's going to have to try to take him to the ground and hold him down and not get submitted and not get taken down himself. He's going to have to fight the perfect fight. And I'm not right. saying he can't do it, but should be interesting. I think it's, you know, in the rankings, Gustafson's ranked number 2, but I think that's based on the performance against Jones. And Gustafson's very good, but I think it's the height thing. Jones not used to that, and I think it's a good matchup for Gustafson. I think if Gustafson and Cormier were to fight each other, I think Cormier would beat him pretty easily. It's my own personal opinion. But, so, well, what I figured we would do, Chad, since there's not a whole lot going on, is I know we had deep dove into the welterweight division a few shows back. Thought we could do the same thing at light heavyweight. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, sounds good.
So,
I guess it's a tale of John Jones and then who you think is number 2 and then kind of everybody else, it feels like, in some ways.
It's a deep division about the top 8 in this division. Yeah. It's a real murderer's row, especially with the addition of Rumble Johnson. I don't know if you had a chance to catch his performance against Rogério Nogueira, but it was eye opening. It was absolutely eye opening. He just blew him out.
Yeah, he looked really good. I mean, Little Nog is sort of like I think we talked about a couple of shows ago. Little Nog, someone that's probably lost a step, but that's the type of performance you want to see, where just everywhere he turned, Johnson just finished him quickly and looked very impressive doing so. And I would say now he's kind of the prospect that you're keeping your eye out on. If Jones can beat Cormier and probably beat Gustafson again, then I would be keeping my eye out on Rumble. If he picks up maybe one more victory, actually, then he's probably in line for a title shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that goes without saying. And it may not even be that he's the next best fighter in the division. It's just that Jones has pretty much cleaned right out the other guys. Does anyone want to see him fight Rashad Evans again, or Teixeira, or Bader? I mean, he wiped the floor with all three of those guys. So I think the path to the, you know, what Jones, who he's going to have to fight, Cormier, if he beats Cormier, definitely Gustafson next. And then, to your point, Rumble. I don't know, who do you think's a good matchup for Rumble next? Do you think I know they don't protect guys, but do you think they throw him in with a Rashad Evans? That's really the UFC way. Put him in with Evans, yeah, or Bader, or something, something like that, or the winner of Teixeira and Phil Davis. Or do you think they maybe feed him Dan Henderson to get him a W?
I was thinking about like a Henderson, or even like a Shogun, but Shogun's probably a little bit too lower ranked right now. But I mean, if it was just me, honestly, I would kind of hold off just a little bit on Rumble, see what happens between Jones and Cormier next month, have Rumble face the loser of that. So then you kind of can build for your future where Rumble faces the loser of that fight, and then let's say hypothetically Jones beats Cormier, then he can fight Gustafson again, and then Cormier and Johnson kind of fight to see who will be the next person to face Jones. It does kind of then get into a situation where you're revolving around those four guys a little bit too heavily, but like we said, with this division, it's really tough with Jones on top, just because he like you said, I mean, you said it, he completely dominated pretty much everybody he's been in there with, except for Gustafson. So having a rematch beyond Gustafson seems like a tall order so far.
Right, and I think your assessment there makes sense, but only, I think a lot of that depends on how the Jones-Cormier fight goes.
Right.
So if Cormier puts up a fight, so let's say it's something along the lines of Hendricks-Lawler, then you see what they did. They put Lawler in with Matt Brown, winner gets Hendricks again, right? If Jones dominates him like he did Evans or Teixeira, I don't think you put Cormier right back into another number one contender fight. Right, I mean, I think it's, you know, especially a fight that he'll probably win.
yeah, I'd phase him down, and then I guess you'd have to go with Rashad and just pray to any gods that you believe in that Rumble will take him out, because that would throw a wrench in the plans, or maybe even Teixeira. I mean, Teixeira certainly was outclassed by Jones, but
yeah,
I don't know. It's kind of an icky situation where there's talented fighters in this division. But so far, Bones looks so much like a class ahead of him. Like I remember when Silva was completely dominant in middleweight. I thought that division overall was pretty weak, though. Not great. And I think this division is certainly stronger than the middleweight was there. But you still have that dominant champion on top, so it's pretty tough from a matchup perspective.
Right. No, completely agree. So, you know, Teixeira and Phil Davis are fighting each other.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. We got Mr. Wonderful in the mix, too, who, he's kind of perplexing. I would say he's the enigma of the group.
He's got all sorts.
You don't really know.
Yeah, he still looks like a wrestler trying to do MMA. He's got all sorts of all the physical gifts in the world. Right. But Rumble. I mean, Rumble didn't blow him out like he did Nogueira, but he won pretty much every second of the fight. But I think if Teixeira can beat Phil Davis, which I think he will, then I think that's a real nice matchup for Rumble. And I mean, what an awesome fight that'll be to watch, watching those freaking guys throw bombs.
Yeah, that'd be a stand-up war. That'd be good.
And Evans is, you know, I mean, he's, you know, he tore his ACL earlier this year, so he's out for a while. And even when he comes back, at this point, he's, you hate to say it, the guy's very talented, but he's 34 years old. And I think he's more of a gatekeeper at this point.
I can't believe, like, that he, one, is only 34, and that he's only had 23 fights. Because I feel like I've seen all 23 of those. I mean, it feels like he's 40 years old and had 50 fights. But, I mean, really, he was on, what, Ultimate Fighter 2? So,
heavyweight. He won as a heavyweight. I think you have probably seen pretty much all 23.
Yeah, that's true. Because it was very early. He was like 5-0 going into the house. So, but somebody that he's my dad's least favorite fighter. So great. Pretty much when he knocked out Chuck Liddell at the show in Atlanta, and I thought my dad was gonna cry in the stands. But
Rashad is. He's a tough guy to like in general.
Very likable.
No, and his fighting, I mean, the way he fights a lot isn't particularly likable either.
He doesn't help himself.
No, he's another guy who, you know, he'll knock Sean Salmon out with this vicious head kick, but then play it safe against other guys. And, you know, I was a big, you'll laugh at this, but Tito Ortiz was my favorite fighter for a long time. And when Tito looked like he was done and they gave him one more fight and he submitted Bader in the first round in a huge upset, and then he stepped in on short notice to fight Rashad, I don't know if I've ever rooted so hard for a guy who just got completely destroyed like Tito did in that fight.
Yeah, that was kind of the end of the road for Tito. But yeah, so I mean, Rashad, I don't know. I mean, I think he's more of a gatekeeper, like we've said at this point, when he does come back. So
Bader, you feel the same way about Bader?
Bader's another guy. He's kind of like the Phil Davis of 3 years ago, where he just couldn't put it together. I remember when him and Jones fought on that Super Bowl weekend. And that was kind of like, who's going to be the next light heavyweight? And Jones just absolutely blitzed him. And since then, he's been up and down, up and down. When he's been in with tough competition, he's lost. And when he's been in with lesser competition, he's pretty much dominated. But kind of tough to see where he would go. I mean, I think him stepping up would be good to see what you have. That might not be somebody bad versus Phil Davis at some point down the road.
Or Rumble.
That could be an interesting clash, either of those two guys. Because I don't think Bader's someone that's completely lost. I mean, if he can get on a roll, he still feels pretty marketable, exciting fighter, and relatively young, too. So.
Yeah. I mean, a Phil Davis fight, stylistically, I think would be kind of boring, because you're looking, they would just be... it would be two great wrestlers in a kickboxing match, which isn't always the most fun thing, to watch.
I'm always hopeful they'll go to the mat, but you're usually right that more times than not they just stare at each other.
So. Well, they have that. They're both so you know, those great wrestlers are so good at using their wrestling and defensively to keep the fight standing if they want to. So I think that's what would be the case there. I think that would be a real tough fight for Bader to win, with Davis being the better wrestler and probably the better striker too. So
maybe feed him Dirty Dan. I don't know.
Poor Dan. I mean, Dan, I love Dan Henderson, but it's time to hang him up. Other than that, I mean, that's pretty much the division. what we've talked about there. There's the pretty big difference between the contenders and the pretenders. So as we've become accustomed to here on the Sports Lounge, and Chad, I believe the last time we were on, we both did predict the Cerrone win. I think you got it right as far as the knockout. So congratulations there. You're on a real roll with your predictions. The cowboy can admit when he's wrong, and you've been even wiping the floor with me like you're John Jones, and I'm Glover Teixeira here. So Let's get a. You willing to make a prediction on Jones Cormier right now?
Her early prediction is I would go. I just think Jones is not going to be taken down. I think he sort of got a little bit hyped in himself going in versus Gustafson. And that was kind of his quote-unquote Matt Serra GSP moment. And he was able to weather that storm, whether you think he won or lost the fight. And I see him beating Cormier, and I think he'll finish him. I mean, it's tough with saying that against an Olympic wrestler and someone that's undefeated. But, Jones is just looking like probably one of the top one or two fighters in the world right now. So,
yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I think wide decision, or if Cormier, it depends on Cormier. If Cormier is willing to stand on the outside and take a beating, it's a decision. If he goes for it, Jones can take him out. I'll go next. So that leaves Jones, Gustafson too. And, you know, I don't think of Gustafson in a Matt Serra kind of way. I really think that he's Jones's antidote. He's the guy. I think Jones had to fight the fight of his life to beat him, and I think Gustafson is going to be emboldened by that. I think of it more of a Spurs Heat situation, and I think Gustafson wins that rematch, and I think he wins it by knockout.
Ooh. Yeah, early predictions, I would go with Jones again. I think Gustafson's more talented than Sarah was. I'm thinking more as like a pretty dominant champion that kind of may have taken it easy going in. And I don't think Jones will do that the next time. I don't know. Those fights are really tough, the rematches, because they kind of went both ways, where the person that eked out a decision completely dominated the next time, or like with Lyoto Machida and Shogun Rua, that sounds like kind of the route you're taking, where Lyoto kind of was lucky to get that decision, and then Shogun absolutely destroyed him when they rematched. So could go either way, but I'd be leaning Jones. I just see Jones dominating this for a while to come right now. Tough to bet against.
It is. But it's a fun division, and these guys are all going to fight each other, and we will definitely, as those fights get closer, we'll take a more in-depth look at it. But, Chad, thanks so much. Always a pleasure having you here on the Sports Lounge. Chad comes in right before close and just, you know, joins Cowboy one-on-one. We have a cigar here in the lounge right before closing. So much appreciated. And everybody, thanks again for tuning into this week's Sports Lounge. We'll be back next week with the Thinking Man Sports Podcast here at placetobenation.com. And please join us. So with that said, Cowboy out. Chad, have a good night. And everybody, we'll talk to you next week. Are you ready to lick me, sensei? Suck me, sexy. We're naked and we're all for sexy. Freak of the week, are you in the mood to fly to the stars with Jackie Moore? When I say love me, you say sexy. Love me, sexy. My zodiac signs are compatible. Clocking that ass from across the room. Your body says love me, your mind says sexy. Go.
isn't